GeekSpeak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
It is October 23rd, 2010, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on GeekSpeak, it's just Al and myself doing the Week in Geek News and taking your calls and comments. It's time now for GeekSpeak. As soon as I get the music going. Welcome to GeekSpeak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Miles Elam. Please keep in mind that the views expressed during GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KUSP. GeekSpeak on KUSP is supported by Whole Foods Market, featuring organic butternut squash for side dishes or use in a recipe. Now available at Whole Foods Market in Monterey, Capitola, and Santa Cruz on SoCal between Branson 40 and Seabright. I'm Miles Elam. In the air room with me is the inimitable Al Luckow, new media architect. Hello. Whoops. Of course, I haven't actually buttered him up.
Hello.
There we go.
Hello, everybody. Yep, I'm here.
It's funny, some technical difficulties at the same time. I'm feeling more confident in my technical difficulties now.
Yes. Yeah.
And so if anybody's wondering where Lyle is, Lyle has been rehearsing for a theater play and doing Miracle on 34th Street, and we look forward to seeing that at, I believe it's Mountain Community Theater.
Mm-hmm. Ben Lohman?
All right, shut up. He's not tied up in the air room.
Yeah, we don't have him tied up.
Okay, really, we don't. It's just us
here
alone. Well, the two of us. Well, and Rick Philman answering phones.
He's a big star now.
And we will be taking calls later on today, and I'll be giving the phone numbers at the break so you can join the conversation. In the meantime, we will be handling geek news. Al, hit us.
Yes. Anyhow, boy, is it cold in here?
It's cold everywhere.
I know this is County. California and everything, but they do have a heater in this place, right? I'm cold. Anyhow, there's a interesting story I ran across.
Yeah, how would you heat this place? Maybe...
How would I heat this place? We plan all this out. See, this is all a part of this. If only there was a way to heat this place. If I had some fuel oil, I could heat this place. Well, here's an easy way to get fuel oil. There's a company called Blest, B-L-E-S-T. It's Japanese, and it's called Blest Company. So, I don't know.
I'm assuming that it's not a direct translation of whatever the Japanese company's name is.
You know, I don't know if that's their name or what. And they also call their product the Blest. It's a neat product. It's a home plastic recycling unit. And what this thing does is you take your plastic and you throw your plastic in there and you turn it on and it turns it into fuel oil. Which is, you know, I mean, that's a pretty amazing thing. I mean, especially if you look at the amount of plastic and all the, you know, there's that whole garbage patch in the ocean and all that stuff. It does do, as far as the kind of plastics that this thing's able to convert from plastic to oil, you'll be able to process polyethylene, polystyrene, and polypropylene, which are numbers 2 to 4 if you read your little recycle doohickey. It still doesn't do the PET bottles, which is the number one yet. But what it does is you push all this plastic in this machine, and the machine is probably, I don't know, it's about as big as one of those mini
Wait,
fridges.
It doesn't do any of the PET?
It doesn't do number one, no.
Okay, because there's PET 1 to 7. So it doesn't do one, but...
Okay, well, it says it doesn't do number one, but it does numbers 2 to 4.
Okay.
And you shove all this plastic in there, and you need 1 kilowatt of electricity. and which is pretty much nothing. It's like 20 cents to do. And then what it does is it can take 1 kilogram.
Well, I don't know. 1 kilowatt isn't something to sneeze at. I mean, think of a 60-watt light bulb and then divide 60 into 1,000. You have that many light bulbs. So it's something that you can – it is a noticeable amount of power, it's not outside the realm of what any household can
do. It's about 20 cents worth of power. All right. So because we have to say if we're going to recycle this stuff, turn it into oil, how much power are we using to do that? So otherwise, you don't want to like do something that you cancels itself out. Even though you are still recycling plastic. So anyhow, you get about 20 cents of electricity, and it doesn't create any CO2 during the process. So it'll turn about 1 kilogram of plastic into 1 liter of oil. That's what it says here. And, you know, it's, I mean, we're talking like, you know, plastic bottles, plastic bags, all these kind of things.
Actually, that makes some sense. If you don't have a CO2 output, then most of the carbon will get converted.
Mm-hmm.
1 kilogram to one. Okay.
Now you might say, well,
that's pretty efficient.
So now we have this, you know, carbon-based fossil fuel that we're creating or whatever.
Right. If you burn that, you're definitely going to be having some CO2 emissions.
So you know, there's a give and take in here. But if you think of it from the standpoint of, there's a bunch of plastic stuff that was going to end up in a landfill, and now it's not going to be in a landfill, and you're going to be able to use it for something that, you know, oil, which vanishes basically. Well, it turns into, I mean, it'll turn into like some sort of pollution if you burn it, but, you know.
Unfortunately, I don't have any stats off the top of my head. I should have prepared for this ahead of time, but something I wonder about is how much power can you get off of a liter of this heating oil? Pretty sure. Well, actually, I'm not sure. If anyone has those quick conversions off the top of their head, please call in. We'd love to hear it. I'm wondering how much power you can get, let's say, if you were the equivalent energy of one kilowatt.
Right.
How much you get out of that much, a liter of heating oil.
Right. Well, the other thing to remember is you no longer have this plastic garbage that you had. So you're taking something that was just going to end up somewhere wrong and using it. And if you were going to use oil anyway, now you're not going to use the oil you would have used.
Right. But that's actually a far more complex equation. One of the issues we have is that we are digging up or piping up or sucking up whatever large amounts of these carbon molecules, fossil fuels, or large chains anyway. And then refining them and burning them. And one of the issues is the CO2 emissions. If you bury plastic, I'm not saying it's a great thing, but if you bury plastic, that carbon is being sequestered in the ground again and not being used, rather than if it's being converted into heating oil and then being burned and then the CO2 goes up.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, if you were going to use heating oil anyway, it's just using – instead of pulling it out of the – and one of the examples that they give is that – you know, like they say, India, you know, they have no fuel. And so everybody's chopping down all the trees to get heat and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So maybe now instead of chopping a tree down, you're, you know, getting some oil. I mean, there's all these different ways. I mean, we think of it in our, I mean, I'm thinking when I see this, I go, wow, why don't they put these right next to the garbage compactors when they build these, you know, fancy new homes and just take, oh, here's your plastic recycling thing that turns into, you know, oil. You know, why not just put an appliance in there? I mean, this is, the company is a blessed company. You know, I mean, throw a few more engineers in this, I'm sure you're going to get it smaller and cheaper, you know.
Well, after a certain point, you're going to hit a break-even point, just like internal combustion engines aren't going to get that much more efficient once you hit, you know, Carnot's efficiency. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I still also wonder, not trying to be a pessimist. Mm-hmm. In fact, here's a more optimistic thing, which is after the plastic's already shipped to you, it's done, the heating oil requires shipment.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Oh, they brought that up too.
The transportation cost with regard to that too.
I mean, you can think up a million things here.
Yeah, I'd be really curious as to how much. Yeah,
Dr. Don's putting on gloves. I could use gloves in this place. but yeah, I mean, imagine being able to just, you know, we already put our recycling things in our little special blue garbage cans and put them out there and all that kind of stuff. But imagine if we're able to just recycle at home. You know, it's sort of like a compost pile for recycling, which I think is a really neat idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it definitely is.
Don't even have the truck come pick your stuff up. Recycle it at home.
Yeah, and there are two things that are going on that are great here. One is that we are looking at different technologies, this being, I'm assuming, some variation or reverse polymerase or some variation. And then you have also the discussion about this going, what are the pros and cons? Mm-hmm. And that's something that we all need to have as a conversation when we're talking about conservation or reduction, to say, what are the pros and cons of me doing this? If I do this, what's the opportunity cost?
Right.
To put it into economic terms.
Right.
So.
Anyway, I want one of those things.
Should call them up and find out how much they cost.
I do know how much they cost.
They cost too much?
They're within reason for a device that seems like it's super duper like this.
Do you think you'd recoup your electricity costs?
Eventually. It depends on how much plastic I use.
Okay. Well, thank you for that story.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to do a special interest story, which is somewhat unusual on Geek Speak. Hmm. This one has to do with a driving accident. There was an individual, older individual, 80 years old, who had a heart attack 2 days prior to the accident, but didn't know it, which is actually fairly common. You may feel a little bit off, or you may not even notice the difference. And so while he's driving along, he's going a good 40, 45 miles an hour. He starts swerving out of the lane because he has lost consciousness. Another person driving in a minivan with family and friends almost gets hit by him and pulls forward and tries to avoid him. And many of us would think, oh, God, what is a stupid person? Like, I'm just going to get as far away from them as possible. Looks in his rearview mirror and notices that the driver is slumped over the wheel. But he had slumped over with his foot still on the accelerator pedal.
Huh.
So Dwayne Innes, who was driving to a baseball game, thinks about this for a second. He's a guy who has worked for Boeing for many years, worked on the F-22 fighter jet program, and knows physics quite well. He goes, we're heading toward a busy intersection. If he's going 45 miles an hour and he goes into the middle of that intersection, a lot of people are going to be killed, including that driver. Or I could go up in front of his truck, try to merge up to it, and the worst case scenarios will be a 5-mile-an-hour difference. We can handle that. And then I will brake and slow down both of us before we get to the intersection. And that's what he did, and he brought them both safely to a halt. And the driver of the truck, the 80-year-old gentleman, was saved, as well as possibly many other people going into an intersection. And I just wanted to do that nice little special interest story to talk about engineering can save people. Physics saves people. And as a side note, as a side benefit, State Farm, who was the insurance company, covered all of the damages without any question, because as far as they were concerned, it was a net win, considering everyone else who would have been hurt or injured in that in that crash. But it's a really cool story. I wanted to share that.
Excellent.
And with that, I will go on to your next story, Al.
Oh, okay. Well,
hey, you got to follow that one. It better be good.
Well, let's see. A couple of iPhone-related stories.
Not good enough. No, I'm just kidding.
You may have noticed that there is no white iPhone.
I did notice that when I was trying to buy my iPhone. I went, where?
They always show the black and the white one, and there's no white one, and nobody's got white iPhones, and they're all black.
Yeah, they always showed the white one, and they always said unavailable.
Yeah. And it's like, well, what's the deal? Okay, so here is the deal. Somebody has actually seen a white iPhone, and they snapped a picture, and it turns out the guy had contacts within Apple, blah, blah, blah. And he said, well, he got one from a friend inside Apple, which apparently they have stacks of them just everywhere in there. Now, but there's a reason that...
Oh, please tell me it wasn't just marketing and trying to get people to buy a second iPhone.
Actually, that would be genius, but actually it wasn't. Apparently, the initial shipments of the white iPhone came through, but there was a problem. The white of the home button doesn't quite match the white of the front faceplate.
Oh, and they just didn't quite go up to
snuff. And Jobs said, we're not shipping these. And it's just the white is a little bit off.
Yeah, their brand is all about everything. It looks perfect. Everything is clean and sleek lines. This would be a big...
No white iPhone.
So it does make me wonder, are they just going to get replacement buttons and then just replace them? Or does it require...
I don't know what they do for that, because, you know, you look at an iPhone, it feels like it's all one thing, but, you know, there's different parts in there. I have no idea how they take those things apart.
Yeah, if they epoxy the thing and it's a permanently attached thing to make sure it doesn't have any problems. I don't know.
But that's the story about why they there is no white iPhone, because it just didn't Jobs just didn't like that white. That color white just wasn't the white enough, or dark enough white, or light enough white, or whatever. It just didn't match. They both got a match. And the other interesting iPhone story I had here was about an iPhone 4 that costs $8 million, which is, you know, kind of a lot. And the reason is there's this guy, Stuart Hughes, and he's this British jeweler, and he always takes these icons like phones. I think you were saying he did the razor.
I don't know if it was a razor. There was another phone that someone was showing me, like Paris Hilton's phone, or some other wealthy person that had this jewel encrusted flip phone.
And the people actually use these things because, you know, you gotta really be ridiculous. But this thing, it's all full of diamonds, and you know, it's a real phone, and it's got 500 individual flawless diamonds.
So now we're Lucy in the iPhone with diamonds.
Yeah. And they actually made it. There's some guy in Australia, some rich guy, I guess, who wanted to have like a more expensive phone than anybody else, and he did it. So, I mean, there are people out there using things like this.
I could spend the $8 million on feeding a whole lot of people, like an entire region. I could give people like money for shelters to house more people for, you know, a year.
Imagine what $8 million could do. I mean,
no,
I think I'm
going to get an iPhone with
or one
with
little
diamonds.
iPhone that will be outdated in a year. You know, I mean, you know, $8 million. You throw that like in some, you know, other country that like in Africa or India or something. You know, that's like they'll, you know, what is it, like a dollar a day to feed somebody? I don't like to think about it. You know,
well, I mean, there are a lot of parts of Africa. I mean, Africa's a big place. There are a lot of parts of Africa that are fully industrialized. We're talking about the poor areas,
right?
Poor parts of the U.S.
Right.
That actually,
exactly, yeah.
$8 million could go a long way. But
so anyhow, that's another ridiculous use of technology and funds, I guess.
Well, okay. Well, moving on.
Yes,
let's talk about Facebook.
Okay.
Two items. One, Facebook, this story's a little bit stale. I didn't get to cover it the last couple of weeks, but Facebook has introduced a one-time password. You go to some coffee shop or some place that actually, coffee shop's not a good example, but some place where you're not sure of the terminal. You just go there. It has a web browser, and you're just going to be using it. But it's a public terminal. You don't want to have... One, people forget to log out, although that's still an issue. But there's also that issue of, like, how much is the browser caching? Does it still have all their user information
in because
there?
You can go into one of those places, log in, and then, like, sort of, like, leave, and you're still kind of logged in.
Well, if you explicitly log out, or if you don't click that checkbox saying, leave me logged in, you should be okay. But there's also the issue of it's a public place, which means someone could put a keylogger on that machine and start harvesting all the passwords and usernames that people have over during the day. And
I don't think there's any kind of bonding process for people who run internet cafes either. I mean, you walk into these places and you think, oh, yeah, this is an official place that
I
trust.
Bring your hand sanitizer as well.
But I mean, come on. These are just businesses, you know?
So what Facebook has introduced is this one-time password, and what you do is you go up to their webpage, a special URL. I'll put that up on the website, and you're able to say request a one-time pad, and you register your mobile phone with it. And so it sends you the password via SMS. So you look on your phone, there's the password that I used for this one session, and you type it in, you log in. And even if there is a keylogger on the machine, in the worst case scenario, there's someone trying to do something nefarious, that password will never work again.
So it only works for a certain amount of time.
It works while you're logged in. You still need to remember to the thing is, if you don't check the box that says, leave me logged into Facebook, as soon as you close the browser, it will log you off, or the cookie will be gone, rather. But it's still a good idea. Remember to log out of your Facebook account. There have been a few cases where people went to like the Apple store and were trying out the iPad. And so they logged into Facebook to see how that works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then they forget to log out. And the next person shows up and goes, oh, somebody's still logged in.
Yeah.
And they start pranking it.
Yeah.
And
I had a friend who just got her Facebook thing hacked and just... everybody was sent messages about go look at this laughing baby, it's hilarious, you know, and it was ended up being like a password harvesting thing, and she's just like, oh my god, you know.
Yeah, so if you're worried about that, and it may not be a bad idea. At the same time, let's be honest here, you're giving your mobile number to Facebook. It's another piece of information, so make sure you know the pros and cons. But overall, I think it's a net win.
Yep,
because it is a very important important security issue.
Yeah, I mean, it's a neat idea, you know.
Speaking of Facebook security issues, I'm just going to finish this up with, because it can't all be good news, which is some Facebook ads are possibly outing gay users.
They're outing gay users.
Right, because you have these ads that are being shown to everyone out there, and the... and they're being tailored toward gay people, the LGBT community. And then you click on it, and as with the case with Facebook in general, if you click on an ad, they know everything about you, and they know all of your friends, and they, you know, and the all of the groups that you're associated with and stuff like that, unless you take some heroic measures. And so what happens is if a friend of yours, let's say you are gay and your friend is gay, and a friend of yours clicks on this ad, suddenly they have a good idea of who else is gay in that group and start tailoring.
You have to make some assumptions, but yeah,
right.
I guess.
And at the same time, some of these people on Facebook are not necessarily out of the closet. They're not ready to let everyone know that they're gay.
Right.
And yet you're going to start seeing more of these targeted ads, and the targeted ads are going to start focusing on the people and focusing on the friends of the people that are clicking these ads. And someone walks up behind them and they don't realize that some of these ads, not everyone is seeing. They're being targeted. So it's targeted to a particular demographic, just as we would be targeted for technology items.
Right. It's just like anything, you know. Nothing is really free. You know, you think, oh, it's all free, but you're giving up something when you get a free thing on the internet. And in many cases, it's information, and and you don't think of information as valuable, but it really is.
Yeah, you are the product. The advertisers are the clients.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Right now, we're going to take a quick break in the middle. Geek Speak on KOSP is supported by Home and Small Business Tech, providing IT support for businesses, tech support for home computers. Home and Business Tech specializes in protecting data and have been providing data storage, recovery, virtualization, and maintenance for over 10 years. HASBtech.com. KOSP co-sponsors the Santa Cruz County United Nations Association Parade celebrating UN Day 65 in Santa Cruz. On Sunday, October 24th, 2010, that's tomorrow, starting at 10:30 a.m. at Cathcart Street and ending at the Museum of Art and History. There will be food and beverages, entertainment, and speakers from local progressive organizations. Information is at 425-7618. And you're listening to Central Coast Public Radio. And with me in the air room are Al Luckow. I guess it's not an R as an is. Al Luckow, new media architect. And I'm your host, Miles Elam. The phone numbers to call in are 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. And in the meantime, Al, got another news story for us?
Yeah, the HP Slate is now announced. It's been announced. I'm not sure if it's exactly shipping. But this is another tablet computer, and it's made by HP. And it's obviously out because the iPad's popular and they want to compete. This one's aimed mostly at businesses, and it's got some interesting things about it. It's running Windows 7, which is also interesting because they had planned on putting the Slate out you know, for a while. But then this summer they bought Palm, which is the new OS, an OS that runs things like this. So they're releasing the Slate right now with Windows 7, but then they have plans to, you know, the next tablet's going to be running their own OS, which is the one they bought from Palm and reworked. There's a couple of interesting things about the Slate that just came out. It's got it's about a pound and a half, 1.8 gigahertz Atom processor, 2 gigs RAM. You know, it's okay. 1024x600 screen. But from
when we how big is the screen again?
1024x600.
No, that's the resolution. What's the screen size?
The screen size itself, you don't know. I don't know. It doesn't say.
Oh, okay.
It looks a lot like an iPad. It's a little bit wider. You know, but you know, it's
wider in proportion or wider overall,
like width. Though it looks more like a
absolute width, or is it proportionally wider? Like, is it a widescreen?
It's
format?
Like a widescreen format, okay. Kind of. It looks a little bit longer, but not too much difference. As a matter of fact, it almost looks exactly like it. But of course, you know, this is a Windows thing, and they are trying to give this nice, clean, you know, Apple-esque impression. So they have, you know, how Windows machines have like, you know, Intel inside or whatever they had, you know, all those little like stickers all over it because, you know, there's a zillion
or
partners.
And,
yeah. Well, they have to do that on this thing too, but they, you know, it's really going to make it look, I mean, just terribly ugly. So they put it on a little sliding panel. There's like a panel, an extra piece of material built into the device itself that slides out for the sole purpose of displaying the logos of the partners. I think that's pretty funny.
Hmm.
You know, so they put a thing on there. Specifically, it's a piece of plastic, you know, another part of something, just to show, if you're, I wonder who the partners are, you know, just to pull that out and then just to look at those pictures, which is, to me, you know, it's kind of bizarre. I don't know. Maybe that's just the way it works. But, oh, man. But anyhow, there's a lot of these tablets coming out now. Cisco's got, you know, there's word of Cisco having one. I hear that's going to run Android. You know, there's all these different things, Android, WebOS, all these things are coming out now. So there's going to be a lot of tablets out there, I think, next year from a lot of different vendors. Fujitsu, I think, had one. And,
okay.
And the Slate's going to have a forward-facing and outward-facing camera. So it's got, you know.
Right, trying to capitalize on what the iPhone did and move it to the tablet before the iPad jumps on board.
So they're going to have, you know, it's sort of a business thing. And I got to tell you, I mean, I use my iPad and you really get addicted to that thing. You know, it's very useful. So the Slate is going to be interesting when this comes out too because, you know, it's going to be for all the people who really like to use Windows, you know, and it's Windows 7. So we'll see what it looks like.
Wonderful. As a follow-up to an earlier story, we were talking about that conversion from plastic to heating oil.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a couple of comments. One, a question of what's the byproducts of combusting or burning this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on, you know, what type of things are coming out. If it's a standard heating oil, like the equivalent of a liquefied natural gas or something like that, where it is just a aromatic hydrocarbon, then it's probably not much more than CO2 and H2O in a perfect sense. And then, you know, if you burn it at a hot temperature, then probably like nitrogen or, you know, nitrogen oxides, just like a gas engine or fuel or, you know, car engine. But we did get a message from Hal in Santa Cruz. Unfortunately, he didn't stay on the line. Would have loved to have a conversation with him. Was that the heating oil would probably be around 80,000 BTU. For the entire liter of it. So I'm assuming that's what he was saying on there, that would be for the entire liter. So if you're burning that whole thing and it lasts, you know, a couple of days or a day, that would be the equivalent of, you know, how do you compare that to, oh, well, I used a kilowatt of power to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you burned one kilobtu, I hate to use that terminology because that's not that would be, I guess, equivalent to 1 watt over 1 second. but you're burning a lot. I mean, that would mean that this would burn up in 80 seconds. That'd be the equivalent of 1 kilowatt.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's. Well,
I mean, there's a lot of ways to look at it.
And, if you're burning it within a minute and a half, that would be a lot. But it may be that you're putting more energy into it. But once again, you have that conversion of what happens with transportation losses and the like. Yeah, so.
And plus the stuff, you know, sitting around, plastic, you know, fish eating it, dying, garbage patch.
So we have a call. Let's try taking it. Nancy in Santa Cruz.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I have read that PVC number 3 is very cancerous. And I was wondering.
I'm sorry, cancerous to.
It causes cancer. There was a film about house tiles made with PVC, and there's been a lot of stuff. If you Google PVC plastic number 3.
Oh, PVC. Okay, yeah.
How safe would that be to recycle at home? I mean, would you keep.
Well, in general, I don't think that any plastic is safe from a fume standpoint if you're burning it. So this is...
It's contained.
Yeah.
You know, it's within a chamber. So you're putting the plastic in, it's being converted, and then it comes out as oil. Uh-huh. As far as I know, it doesn't give off any... It doesn't say anything about giving off any fumes, but, you know, hey, we've all burned plastic before, and that stuff stinks.
The issue with PVC was that people were talking about it outgassing. So if you were holding liquids or something like that in there, it would outgas into that or into the air. And if you're burning something, it's a whole different equation. It's just like you wouldn't want to breathe in the smoke from burning wood. Anytime you burn anything, it's going to have some toxic effects.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm not the doctor who should have asked this, perhaps I'm the doctor while she was here. But at the same time, if you're having a closed system where you're heating it up, but you're not outgassing, then I don't know. Obviously, you want to vent it after you've done it.
If you had a big pile of plastic sitting around your closet, getting it ready to be recycled.
Yeah,
I mean that's kind of the idea with the PVC.
If you're worried about the outgassing with PVC, you don't buy it in the first place. The burning it after the fact seems
like
it's
true. I don't buy it in the first place. Yeah. So I wouldn't have any number 3 anyway. So it would be just number 2 and 4 anyway. So.
Yeah, I mean it's they face a cancer and it harms your immune system and your reproductive system. They have all these things. You know, it's usually because of the plastic's already made and it's giving off a. The fumes by itself, you know, burning it. I mean, who knows what kind of fumes come out of burning it? They don't even. That's not really part of the whole equation.
Right.
Could be even worse. I don't know.
What is the process that it goes through in this recycler to turn it into oil?
I don't know with this particular one. It was Al's story, and I don't know. Well, heat is always involved with that process, but I know I've heard of things like that being done. For example, with turkey farms, there was a turkey that was handling all the offal that you get from processing, and they were using what's called a reverse polymerase. And I'm assuming that's what they're doing here, or some variation of it. But it also basically involves a fair amount of heat and a fair amount of pressure, and just having those carbon chains go back into a usable form again, into a long form again.
Mm-hmm. Okay, just thought I'd mention that.
Yep. Okay. Thank you very much for your call.
Okay, bye.
Bye. And let's see, who do we else have on the line? Oh, and we're getting some corrections from Hal. Hal is calling back in, and Hal, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello.
Hello. You have some corrections for us, and thank you so much for calling back.
Yeah, I didn't understand you wanted the conversion of a liter. What I was doing was based on a kilowatt hour is, you know, about 3,300 BTUs, and that your conversion of fuel oil compared to gasoline is about 80% the efficiency of gasoline. That was sort of the conversion I was doing. So I didn't have the number that you were looking for, and so there was miscommunication.
Okay.
But the more important point, the reason I called back besides that correction, was to say that you guys are missing something very critical about plastics. and just picking up on the PVC question, when you burn a chlorine-containing plastic, you create dioxins and furans, very, very nasty chemicals. There are no commercial plastics that you're going to use, that you're going to recycle in this machine that don't contain other compounds besides the featured polyethylene or polycarbonate or whatever it is, because they can't be made into useful products without some other, for example, the phthalates that are the linking compounds in soft plastics. So, and then generally we're talking about soft plastics.
Right, the soft plastics tend to be nastier.
So you're going to create the conversion to CO2 and water is a very nice theoretical construct. But as you pointed out with wood, that isn't what comes out of the combustion, because wood has other things in it besides, you know, the carbon that you're looking to burn. I'm wearing a polyethylene shirt and a polyethylene jacket. My shirt came from milk bottles. So I don't think the landfill is the only alternative. So I
it
think
definitely
that
is
a,
not, yeah.
That's a false comparison. I'm not encouraging the use of plastic bottles. I think we need to stop using plastic bottles. I think the solution is to stop using them. But this is a fantasy that's like the fantasy in the early 70s that recycling made you an environmentally correct person. I did it. You know, we all did. I started burying my garbage, all kinds of things. The fundamental rule is that everything has to go somewhere.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering about the losses. If you have that mass of the plastic, that's where I was thinking you would get something as opposed to burying it. But as we were covering before, that means it's not being buried. And
right.
It's still being in system being released into the atmosphere once you burn it.
Correct. I mean, you guys are having a good dialogue. It was, you know, relatively well-informed, but you were missing the byproducts of combustion.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling in.
Even perfect combustion of natural gas, you do get byproducts. You get fine particle formation. One of the biggest hazards of using natural gas for cooking in your home is your exposure to the formaldehyde and the fine particles and other things that are produced by that combustion.
The formaldehyde being the part that gives it the distinctive smell? Or is that something
No. The smell is an additive that's for safety, so that you can smell it. So that if you have a leak, you'll smell
right.
it.
I guess I was trying to think of what was the chemical that they used for the odor.
Mercaptans.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. They're detected by odor at very, very low concentrations, so there's not much in there. That the combustion of that wouldn't be something I'd be concerned about.
Right.
No, formaldehyde is a very simple compound. It's HCHO, you know, and it's formed in our bodies. We exhale it. It's formed from any process where you have a water molecule and a little carbon around it. It quickly gets formed. It's not a major byproduct of combustion, but it is. Motor vehicles used to be one of the major sources of the formaldehyde to which we were exposed. The cleaning up of automobile emissions has reduced the ambient air concentrations of formaldehyde. Most of what we get comes from composite wood products that we use, furniture and particle board and plywood and stuff like that. I just picked on formaldehyde because people know that chemical's name.
Right, they know it from preserving cow fetuses and the like.
Lots of things formed in combustion other than the theoretical water and
right.
That's all, but it's very complex, and I appreciate there was an effort to deal with the complexity, and I just wanted to add the additive question with plastics as a major source of toxic chemicals when they're burnt.
It's just one of those other things. You just don't get something for nothing, you know.
Exactly. We're back to Barry Commoner. Everything must go somewhere, and there's no free lunch.
Yeah. And it's just like, you know, another fusion machine here. But, you know, it does do something, and a lot of people are talking about it. It's nothing. There's no free ride. Energy comes from somewhere. It's, you know, it's not going to be perfect. Otherwise, we'd have these on top of our cars.
Yeah, and now that we have you on the line, now I can pick your brain and ask, would you think it would be a reverse polymerase reaction for getting the plastics back, or?
I really don't know.
Yeah, I guess we have to look it up.
Okay.
Thank you so much for the call. That was wonderful.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Hal.
Bye.
Bye. And it goes to show this show is only as good as the people who call in.
Yeah, man. That guy's pretty smart.
Yeah, so any other geeks out there, if we ever make any mistakes, please call in. It makes some great conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see here. How about John from Felton? John from Felton.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Well, a couple things I wanted to mention real quick about the subject you were talking about is I never understood if we produce formaldehyde, there's an enzyme that breaks it down. And so if small quantities of formaldehyde are being produced by a gas burner at home, wouldn't your body pretty much be able to handle that small amount of formaldehyde?
You're talking about that sometimes it already exists anyway in our bodies?
The gentleman was mentioning that your gas burner at home also produces formaldehyde, but I thought that since our bodies produce it, and I know there is an enzyme that breaks it down, otherwise you'd be in trouble physically, I wonder if our bodies can break down that small amount from the burner. I don't necessarily expect that you have the answer, but I thought that we did have some system.
I don't have a definitive answer, but I would say just off the top of my head that you're talking about repeated exposure or continual exposure, so it depends on how much the body can take. And also you're burning it and inhaling those responses, which is different from just having it exposed in your system. So that pathway going when you're breathing stuff in is a very quick way to injecting chemicals into your bloodstream.
I do know that if you drink ethyl alcohol, it helps block its absorption into your body as well.
Yes, ethyl alcohol, standard what we consider alcohol, is also a great way of getting past methyl alcohol poisoning.
Right, right.
Moonshine. So, yeah, it's a great way of slowing it down. Your body can process it before, slowing down the process or taking precedence. But, yeah, this would be a great conversation to have with the doctor next week. I think we should send some email to her and see if she can cover this just as a follow-up.
The methyl alcohol turns into formaldehyde in your eyes. That's what the problem with that is.
Right.
Actually, my question is much more fundamental. I can never seem to get KUSP on my radio. There's always some amount of static. And I'm wondering if you guys know enough about antenna theory to help me get it to work a little better. I know if you have more mass in your antenna.
Where do you live?
I live in Felton, but I lived in other places in the county. Mm-hmm. And I'm downtown. I lived in South County.
Huh.
And I cannot ever get you guys clear.
I get it in Ben Lomond, but... since San Ardo is where the transmitter is?
Or? No, that's the repeater. Oh. I don't know if it's going right now, but there are multiple repeaters. There's one here. There's one downtown.
Yeah.
And there's one at the summit.
Yeah.
So
really, I get KKUP clear as crystal.
Well, if you're over the hill, it's actually no longer 88.9. It's 90.3.
Yeah, they changed the number.
So it's like you're listening to KUZU on one side of the hill, and then you go to KUSP on the other side of the hill. So
you actually have to change your radio station to get us when it gets further away. It's annoying, I know.
But
there's always internet radio,
right? But I don't know.
Podcast.
You could try contacting the station, calling the station manager, or emailing the station manager. And just going to KUSP.org will give you some contacts there for information. May be able to work out some issues with you to find out if it's a problem on our end or if gives you some tips to help up your bump up your reception, things like that. I'd highly recommend that.
It'd be good to do a show on radio.
Yeah,
about why your radio does what it does.
Yeah, because we're definitely two of the geeks that we don't know.
Yeah, Lyle's the one. Theater. He's the genius with the radio here,
or at least with electronics in general.
Yeah.
So sorry we couldn't help you out more, but highly recommend you contact KUSP in general. Just send some email, and it could definitely help you out more than we have.
Okay, love your show.
Yeah, thank you very much. Take care.
All right, bye bye.
Interesting thought though that you're. Your stove is giving off fumes. You don't think about it, but yeah.
Well, everything does. There's when people talk about I need to get rid of lead in my environment, lead's an element. It's not we need to break down this molecule into something else that hurts less or whatever. It's you're never talking about we need to eliminate arsenic from our environment. It's, we need to reduce it to the minimum levels that are acceptable for human health.
I mean, over, you know, if you overdo anything, really, you're going to end up getting some kind of cancer, you know. Just
well, formaldehyde too much is, of something is particularly something you don't want to burn and inhale. But yeah. Okay, let's look and see. We've got Rich in SoCal. Rich, you're on the air.
Hi, I've got a geekish update on the battles with Google Calendar Viewer.
Yeah, you called in what, a week or two ago?
Last week. So it's not backed up by you know, your own Google Calendar account. So when I go into that, it doesn't have the, you know, the entries that I made there. What it is there's in your Google home page, the IG file, there's user preferences, and this calendar viewer has 12 user preference strings, one for each month, and so we kind of decoded them, and you can save that as an XML file. So if anybody of your, if any other listeners are among the 56,000 stranded users of Google Calendar Viewer, if you go into the, if you hit Add Stuff and go to Google Calendar Viewer, there's a discussion stream going there where we're decoding how it's represented. And I guess the next step is, since we can save, you know, all the information for each person as an XML file, there must be some automated way to turn that into, you know, entries for some other.
Okay, so you found out the data is still there, just the widget, the data format maybe changed, and so the widget broke.
The widget, it looks like the source code for the widget's missing.
Okay.
It's a weird thing, you know, but if you could get the data out, I mean, you'd think it'd be better if you could get a, you know, a tabbed, delineated, very simple, re-importable database type CRV file.
Yeah, it may be hierarchical in this case, which is why it's talking about having XML, but great detective work.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'll keep you posted if we find some automated way to reactivate it all.
Great, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Okay, let's see here.
I guess you probably have to write a custom database or something for that, but then you'd have to re-import into a new calendar.
Yeah.
There's some work there.
Let's see here. Well, Alex, our Southern California correspondent, was trying to call in. We waited a little bit too long, and he dropped. There is more time, Alex, if you can call back in. But are you still on?
He's not.
And he's still there. So, Alex, our Southern California correspondent, hello.
Hello, Miles.
How's it going?
Right. It's almost the end of the show, but I'll get to say hello.
Yeah, so what did you want to cover?
All right, just a quick little story I'll throw in there. I was trying to dig up some stories. I heard that you guys were running a little low on geeks today.
Yeah.
So one interesting story.
I don't know, we had a community geek come in, so that was
that was pretty good. Yeah. I like that.
Mm-hmm. People band together.
Yeah, it's great when you hear a caller come in and have a lot of detail and really good information.
Yeah.
I came across an article where the UK is looking to basically play some Big Brother roles, actually looking at recording and tracking every email, phone call, and website that's visited. It's a particular, the coalition government party, I believe, is...
coalition government meaning there are two parties that are sharing power.
Ah, okay. Well, they're revisiting now the snooping plans. There's a lot of controversy, obviously, about this. I thought it was particularly interesting just because Europe in general has been very guarded about a lot of their citizen information, and particularly about the corporations not being allowed to have access or share it or do anything with it, you know, outside of very strict guidelines. So it's interesting to see that the government is looking to collect so much information about its citizens.
Well, we're not particularly immune to that here on this side of the pond either.
No. But, you know, a lot of that information's, you technically become public. You know, a lot of times you do things and, you know, it's public information. I mean, is it wrong for the government to collect public information?
Not all the information that you email is public information.
No, not that you'd email, but I mean blogs and all these kinds of things. I'm sure governments
are
keeping track of all that stuff. You see Facebook, people, you know, make threats on Facebook and they find them and...
Yeah, but they're talking about recording the phone calls, recording the emails, I mean, the actual content, not just the metadata about it.
Yeah, wow. So we need to get email programs that handle PGP a lot better.
Yeah, of course, you know, they'll just ask you for the encryption key, but...
Yeah,
but at least in the UK, they don't have, I don't know if they have these protections, but in the US, at least you could say, no, Fifth Amendment, I can't provide, I should be compelled to provide the key because that would incriminate me.
Right.
Unless you're ordered by a court, and then they can do that anyway.
On the contrary, the Constitution trumps the court. So that's the question. The court may find you contempt and throw you in jail, but technically, you shouldn't be forced to incriminate
yourself. I have to look up the cases and you know, talk to you more about that. But last I heard, encryption key is not counted. It's considered the same as saying that your computer is considered.
Yeah, let me backtrack. I'm saying how I think it should be, as opposed to how it actually is.
That's what I was saying.
Like the court may in fact throw you in jail
you
and hold you in contempt. But.
I very much agree with you on that. But yeah, I think unfortunately it's not viewed. You know, you're forced to share information, basically that gives access that could incriminate yourself in that case. From the last cases I've heard about.
Okay. Well, thank you for that call, and I'll talk to you later. Thanks for calling in.
All right, thank you.
Geek Speak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Geek Speak on KUSP is supported by the Palo Alto Medical Foundation, Santa Cruz, with local doctors in Aptos, Capitola, Santa Cruz, Scotts Valley, SoCal, and Watsonville. Details on finding a personal doctor at thedoctor4u.com. And Geek Speak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence, and we thank the Puppet Master for its use. And we have Crazy USB of the Week from Al Luca.
Oh, yeah, this is a crazy one. And a lot of these, and these are all real. A lot of these you think, well, this is ridiculous. This can possibly exist. Now, this I know for sure exists. I know for sure they all have existed at least at one time. This one is called the USB Screen Smasher from Monkeysoft. Now, what it is it's a little styrofoam hammer, soft, and a USB sensor that sits in there. And you attach the USB sensor to one side of your monitor and plug the jack into your PC. This is a Windows-only product. You install the software for the USB so it recognizes the foam hammer. And then when you just get mad at your computer, you just pick up this foam hammer and you smash your screen. And what happens when you do that is the screen just goes push, and it looks all cracked and everything, and then breaks off into little pieces and falls down, you know. I posted a link, and there's video of people doing this, and the thing looks kind of real. I mean, it looks like you're really smashing your screen. Kind of a neat thing. It's crazy. It's crazy. It's USB, and it's real, and the link will be up on geekspeak.org.
Wonderful. Thank you for that. And Car Talk on KOSP is made possible by a grant from the Holly Family Fund at the Community Foundation of Santa Cruz County. We appreciate their support. Thank you, Al, for joining me.
Sure.
And thank you, Alex Slias, for our Southern California correspondent, for joining as well. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at KUSP.org. This is Miles Elam with GeekSpeak. And yes, this has been GeekSpeak. And you can reach us at geekspeak.org. And we will see you next week. Lyle will be returning.